Hub Spotting 103.
Wednesday, August 10th, 2011.
Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
It's Wildcard Wednesday, where anything goes.
That's right. So today, I think if you'll indulge us, we want to talk a little bit about this most recent San Diego Comic-Con.
This was our fourth Comic-Con, but in a lot of ways, it was different from all of the others. This was a Comic-Con of firsts, because this was the first time we took our children with us,
right,
and my mother-in-law. Ryan took Katie to the con, and they spent most of the time there. But I and my mother-in-law took my sons around San Diego to see the sights.
Yeah, so two trips in one there, and I guess we'll cover both to some extent. Of course, Comic-Con was the reason why we started going to San Diego every July, and we used to go just for Lost, and now we go for Lost, Lost Friends, the Lost fan community, but of course, everything else that goes on there. On the Comic-Con side, I think, you know, logistically, every year it feels like Comic-Con is just getting bigger and bigger, and it's always just bursting at the seams. It seems at the very edge of exploding, and I think that's still going to be an issue forever, but with over 130,000 people going, I think for the most part, they do a pretty good job of managing the madness in terms of how the whole thing operates.
I mean, nobody's died at Comic-Con yet, which I think
one stabbing,
which is a major achievement considering just the sheer volume of people. I wander the exhibition hall, and there are literally just, it's crammed full of people, and to make your way through the exhibit hall takes a long time, a couple of hours.
Well, that's like a mile long, and there's people everywhere. So, I mean, it is really overwhelming. If it would be your first time, I can see how it can just drive you bonkers, but it's certainly an experience like no other. I would say this year, I mean, every year over the 4 years we've gone, picking up your badge, that first time where you have to get your badge to start having fun, it gets better every year. It seems to go smoother. The line is shorter and shorter. This year, it seemed to us, at least, there was no line. In fact,
no,
they started early.
We walked in and we walked out in about 3 minutes with our badges. The first year was a line that was just unmanageable. There were thousands of people in one line trying to get into the convention center, and it took us probably 2 hours to get our badges.
Right, and then the year after that, they started separating where you could get your badges at another location. It was at Hotel Circle or in one of the hotels over there. So, you know, they are finding ways to deal with it. This year, more and more, every year, they have more and more events at the hotels surrounding the convention center, so it's already kind of expanding into the city. And, of course, there are now people and brands and companies and celebrities that are doing things in San Diego downtown in the Gaslamp that are not officially affiliated with Comic-Con. There's more and more events that just sort of happen in the area that you don't even need a badge to get to. So I think as the event has grown, it's still not enough to drive us away. I mean, there's a lot of moments of frustration, I think. I think we saw that this year. We saw that every year that we've been there. But it's still a great time. And just kind of closing out the logistics thing, though, the idea of registering at Comic-Con for the next year, so registering this year for 2012, that was the only thing, I think, that really drove everyone bonkers. That was really, for a lot of people, a deal breaker this year.
They gave only a fraction of the badges out during the con. This year, they limited the amount of registrations that you could make to like 40,000 or something.
Well, it was a small number, and it was by day as well. So now, in all years past, when you went that first day to pick up your badge, you could walk over to the next table and register for the next year. Now, this has not been a problem in the sense that means everyone at the con can come back the next year, but for all of the hundreds, perhaps thousands of people that want to start coming to Comic-Con, it was a problem, because it seemed that once you were in the club, you were fine, but if you never got in, you'd never have a chance. So I can see the logistical reason why they did it, but it was very frustrating. We tried to stand in line for that first batch, that first day's batch of tickets, and when we barely moved and they sold out with, you know, still 1,000 people in front of us, we decided not to try again. And I think a few other people made that call, and other people were sleeping overnight. So now, instead of camping overnight to see the great panel you want to see, you're camping overnight to get the next year's tickets, which is pretty insane.
It's not anything anybody wants to do, especially not for something that used to be so easy. So what's going to happen for 2012 is, I think most of the registrations will be bought online.
Right. And that means, though, if you've never been, I think this upcoming year is the first good chance you're going to have. And I say that tongue firmly planted in cheek, in the sense that the other reason why everybody panicked is that the online sales of these tickets have always gone poorly, and for this year's it was worse than ever in terms of the server crashing, with them losing track of this and that, trying 3 or 4 times, false starts, small batches. They just could not figure out a way to sell these tickets without causing mass pandemonium. So I think that's the other reason why everybody was lining up and staying up overnight, because they just did not want to miss that chance. But that still means that there's more chance for people who've never been to Comic-Con to get in. So I think apart from the panic over 2012, for the most part, this was a good con, a typical con, a bigger than ever con, I'm sure. I would say that in terms of where they hold certain events and how they balance the program, I probably wouldn't be able to do it. I think you might need some kind of PhD in demand and crowd management and everything to do it correctly. But this year, there was a significant imbalance between the things they were putting in Hall H, which is the biggest hall, holding 6,000 people, and Ballroom 20, which is slightly smaller, holding maybe 4,000 people. And it got to the point where the line at Ballroom 20 was just exorbitantly long, incredibly long. It was just not just around and down along the waterfront, but out into the peninsula on the other side of the marina. You could be standing in the convention center in that line and see someone who looks like he's a mile away at the other end of the line across the water. On the other hand, the Hall H line sometimes evaporated completely. They got everybody waiting in line into the room to the point where if you just walked up, you could get into the session happening at that time. So I think that was kind of interesting. It was a lot of the TV shows were in Ballroom 20. A lot of the big movies were in Hall H. But I think there was a significantly stronger demand for a lot of these TV shows this year.
Well, a lot of the movies were not at the con. A lot of the big movie studios chose not to exhibit their programs at Comic-Con this year.
So there weren't as many of those big releases. In fact, Cowboys and Aliens was the big one this year, and it didn't do as well in the box office as everyone was expected. So they're kind of comparing it to, you know, Skyline and some of the other movies that have gone big at Comic-Con and not done well at the box office. And maybe they're saying that getting all of these geeks all, you know, riled up at Comic-Con isn't necessarily a guarantee of success in terms of a commercial release. But the TV shows were still good. The Ballroom 20 line is, you know, I'll put it to you this way. We tried that first day with Katie, and we gave up. We said, you know what, it's already all the way down here behind the convention center. We're not even going to try. So we just played it by ear and wandered around and had a really good time.
But that's the second year in a row that at least you have skipped out on the Ballroom 20 line.
Right.
We did so last year also.
But I think that's an important thing to kind of share with people, is that you might be so devoted to seeing one panel or one event, but if you hang your happiness on that, you're going to be really disappointed if it doesn't happen. So for us, we went to a 10 o'clock session that we got up early for, and then we got in the Ballroom 20 line at 11 to try and catch something that was going to be at 3. I mean, we thought giving 4 hours would be enough to get us into Ballroom 20, but we barely moved a dozen yards in a 3-hour wait, and knowing at that point that we weren't going to get in to see what was in Ballroom 20. I think it was like Big Bang Theory last year.
Mm-hmm.
We said, to heck with it. And we literally just got onto a trolley across the street, went up to Old Town, and just walked around and played tourist. And I think we had a really great time, even though we didn't see the big panel that year.
That's an important thing to learn, is that you, as a con attendee, are in a very pretty city. You are in a really nice place. And I think it's important for people to explore San Diego a little bit. Maybe take some time out of your con experience to just look around. We ate at a really nice restaurant called El Agave in Old Town. It's expensive, and but the food was wonderful.
Well,
and
yeah, what was key to that experience was it was not planned. I mean, every year you pull out the giant grid of programming. You even might look at some of the restaurants you want to go to and meticulously determine where you're going to be every hour of every day. We don't do that anymore. And that was kind of the clincher for us, because we ended up at that restaurant by pure chance. We didn't even know if it was a good restaurant. We didn't check Yelp or anything. But I would say it was still a good experience.
I had a great time just being in Old Town again. That's something I look forward to every year since the first year that we went and we found ourselves there. Old Town is really an important place to go in San Diego.
Well, and the thing being is that every year for the last 4 years, we've spent less and less time at the con and more time out and about. And I think that's a natural progression. So if you are going to do the same thing, I think you might have that same experience, that there's only so much lines and crowds that you can really take. And that shouldn't be all that you see. So again, Katie and I, our daughter, really wanted to see these panels in Ballroom 20. But we said, you know what, forget it. We'll do something else. We still had fun, but I wasn't sure how things were going to go the next 2 days. I was like, all right, so was that disappointment enough to dissuade our 13-year-old from being really into this con experience? Maybe she's going to want to go with you and run around San Diego. But no, she got up at 5 a.m. to the following 2 days to be very upfront in the line for ballroom training every morning. And in fact, we spent two consecutive days with spending hours in ballroom 20 watching all of these panels. So at least as a dad of a potential geek, I was kind of excited that she was willing to go through that. In fact, that second day I woke her up and I said, do you want to go to do the ballroom 20 line again, or do you want to sleep in? And I was kind of hoping she might have said sleep in, but no, we were there and spent the day at ballroom 20. So at least for a bonding experience, I thought that was great. So still, this Comic-Con, at least Katie and I, if not you, got to see a number of panels, a number of sessions, the audio from which I've shared a number of them here in our feed. Certainly hope you've enjoyed that. That's something I like to do here for Pop Spotting. You did make it to the con that first night, that mythical preview night, that extra night that opens Comic-Con. So we did get to see advanced screenings of TV shows that haven't yet come on the air. I can't remember the name of all of them. One was a Japanese anime interpretation of Supernatural,
right?
Which was, I have no idea what to make of that. It was bloody and messy and completely unintelligible to me, but we sat through that.
Well, anime is a really big thing. I mean, anime has tons of fans all over the world, and they probably have a better understanding of what happens in anime shows than I do, but it was really strange. And then we saw The Secret Circle.
Oh my, yes.
Which was, I guess, The Witch Diaries.
Well, that's the thing. Now, sitting through this show called The Secret Circle, so it was the Warner Brothers, it was WB,
yeah,
maybe?
I believe
or
so.
CW. It was one of those young sort of networks, so it was The Secret Circle, and it was completely indistinguishable to me from that time we went to Comic-Con and saw the early screening of
The Vampire Diaries. Yeah.
It was a bunch of really pretty people being very angsty in a small town with a secret. But instead of being neck-biting vampires, they were witches. They were witches. And it was tough for a lot of people in the audience, not just us, to really take it seriously.
I laughed through the whole thing.
It was really, actually, it was probably the funniest thing I saw at Comic-Con. And at one point, I realized that one of these characters was called was a guy. It's not all girl witches running around. There was a guy,
right.
And I actually tweeted. I said, "Oh, what? How can you have a guy witch?" And somebody said, "Oh, they're called a warlock." And I said, "No, this pretty little boy is not a warlock. He's a boy witch. He's a witch." And from that point on, we were just referring to the guy as a witch. So yes, that's The Secret Circle. Not our style, but perhaps aimed at our daughter. But I don't think she was particularly
interested either. She was not.
But the reason why we sat in on preview night was the two network shows that were previewed. They were Alcatraz. So that's a new series starring Jorge Garcia. And we also saw the preview of Person of Interest starring the great Michael Emerson. Now we had Joe Pinion needed on our show. Mm-hmm. She previewed them, but now that we got to see those pilots, what did you think about those two upcoming shows starring Lost alumni?
I think Alcatraz is going to be a little bit of Lost and a little bit of Fringe and a little bit of something else that I can't quite put my finger on, all wrapped up into one. There's a big mystery, and there are FBI agents and a lot of intrigue, so I think it's going to be interesting.
It was good to see Jorge Garcia. I mean, he had a lot more to do at the start of the show, the episode, than he did in the second half, where he basically just followed everyone else around like a puppy. So I was a little kind of disappointed. I really wanted to see Jorge Garcia front and center, but of course he's not necessarily the star of the show. He's just the one that we're paying attention to. Sam Neill, though, he's one of the central characters, and it's always good to see him on screen.
Yeah, Sam Neill from Jurassic Park.
So I liked Alcatraz. I mean, it had a very dark kind of moody sense to it, but seemed to move pretty briskly as well. It did have the feel of a procedural, but with a mythology. There was, to me, I was thinking like the 4400. I'm not sure if anybody remembered that
series.
Yeah,
that one too.
I
maybe.
Mean, basically, we're talking about a subset of people out there that need to be tracked down or need to, you know, we're trying to learn more about. And so, and the premise is interesting too. It was fascinating. I did sit in on the panel about it. I also put the audio on the feed where they basically admitted, yes, we realize there are a lot of parallels to Lost, but we're not going to shy away from them. We're going to embrace them. but we're still going to make it a good show. I think a lot of people liked Alcatraz better than Person of Interest, the Michael Emerson show. I don't know how you felt, but I actually liked Person of Interest better. I thought that was the show I would be much more interested in watching.
I liked it, but I'm not sure what kind of a show it's going to be because there were so many different things happening. I'm wondering if it's going to be like a Person of the Week kind of show, or if there's going to be a lot, a much bigger mystery and a bigger storyline. I don't really know exactly what kind of show this is going to be. So I think I'm going to have to just, you know, watch it and figure out what it is first.
Well, Person of Interest, I think, was more Person of the Week than you would see with Alcatraz. I got a much stronger sense of an underlying mythology for Alcatraz versus Person of Interest. And you know, we're fans of Lost. You know, we like these long sort of serial dramas. But I just really liked the Michael Emerson, I think, added the correct amount of gravitas and elegance and significance to his character and to what was happening in Person of Interest. I just felt I was really more engaged with what was going on and more invested in it. The only thing about Person of Interest that I thought was fascinating is where you have Alcatraz, where they're telling you that you only have a small idea of the big picture of what's going on here. I thought they were going to do the same thing with Person of Interest, but there is exactly one scene in the Person of Interest pilot where Michael Emerson's character, in determining what's, you know, in explaining what's happening, basically explains everything. It's almost as if in the pilot episode of Lost, somebody said, well, there's these two people who are fighting to determine who the next, you know, protector of the island is.
Right.
Like, they spell it out completely. And on one hand, I thought that was, oh, that's a little kind of disappointing. But on the other hand, I thought that was brave of them, where they're saying, you know what, the big picture here is only a part of it. And what we really want you to focus on is these characters and as you get to know them. And for Person of Interest, with, I think, a lot of this explained up front, you're going to be able to feel more comfortable just jumping into the Person of the Week, the mystery of the week, the case of the week. And in many ways, I think that makes it more accessible. Maybe my brain has just become a little more simplistic lately, where I still found that attractive. But for sure, we are going to watch both of those shows. So that was preview night, pretty much where you saw a lot of these early screenings of shows. The only other one that I saw that you didn't very quickly was Terra Nova. Now, this is a Steven Spielberg-backed series. A lot of people are describing it as Jurassic Park of the week. And there are dinosaurs. There is a lot of special effects, and this is actually coming to Fox next month. I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was pretty solid. I think it felt like a Spielberg film, and that means for better or worse. I mean, there seemed to be a lot of character developments aimed at a younger audience. I'm talking about like a teen audience, so mm-hmm. those kind of things I wasn't really into. And the primary question I think on everybody's mind is, when you do see these great special effects, either the setting of the near and scary, you know, dystopian future, as well as this ancient time where there are dinosaurs roaming, is how can they possibly sustain this level of special effects and put it out every week? I mean, I think that's really what people are going to be more curious about rather than the story. It's going to be, unfortunately, I think, a show that's going to be judged based on effects and not on drama. But, you know, I think we'll give it our standard 3 or 4 episode try. I mean, are you interested in Terra Nova with the dinosaurs and intrigue and political dynamics on a planet that may or may not be Earth?
I'm not really into sci-fi. It's not my thing, but we'll give it a shot.
Well, you know, it's interesting because a lot of the characters in Terra Nova were really flat and uninteresting in the clearest way. I was like, oh, that they're boring. This is boring. It's all just eye candy. But there are a couple of standouts, a couple of actors that I thought were really interesting. Stephen Lang, I think, key among them. I might just really like him in everything, but he's a great, gruff, tough dude who's in charge of this outpost. So I might watch it just to see what's up with his character. The other thing that struck me is this show is putting a lot of attention on these dinosaurs and this ancient time and this vast wilderness. And some of the, you know, location shoots and where they mix it with the effects is not really well done. Yet the series premiere opens in this dystopian future, and I actually thought that was an interesting place. You know, I really hope they spend at least some time still exploring the world where they open rather than this new world that they're trying to explore and discover. Finally, on the Comic-Con side, I would be remiss in not mentioning that there were, in fact, two lost events on the program. Mm-hmm. The first was an Entertainment Weekly Totally Lost panel, which, just like last year, had surprise guests. And this year's surprise guests were Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse. So that was a really good session, a lot of fun, and I posted that audio in the feed. And I do want to acknowledge our podcasting buddies, our superstar Lost podcasters, Jay and Jack Gladfelter, who once again packed a room to do their podcasting, Lost podcasting panel. And although you weren't able to join us, the other featured guest, I think the lead guest, the starring guest, was actually Christopher White, who you may know from the official Lost podcast that ABC does. He does a lot of other work for ABC and Disney. It's always good to see him and really to hear his thoughts, you know, coupled with ours from the outside, from the inside of how Lost kind of came together and how it all now has left this legacy. I haven't posted the audio for that. I might do that over on the transmission feed or somewhere else. If you're interested in it, let me know. Otherwise, you can always find the videos that Jan Jack put up on YouTube. So that was pretty much a lot of the previews. That was the Comic-Con side of our experience. With the time left, why don't you talk a little bit about what was going on with you and the boys and my mom outside in San Diego?
Well, here's a lesson for you guys. Legoland is nowhere near San Diego.
Yes.
It's about 100 miles away, is a lesson that I learned the hard way by taking a cab there.
Yeah, the interesting thing was after you called me from there and told me that the fare was like $150, I went and found a rental car that was $150 for 2 days. So for the next 2 days, we could go anywhere we want for less than the price of a one-way trip to Legoland. So that's an important lesson. But
it's something you might want to consider, a car. It seems like too much trouble, but I'll tell you, for that short time that we had the car, it was really handy.
Well, it's really handy if you are going to do things outside of where the convention is, because actually finding parking for your car anywhere near the convention center is its own, you know, circle of hell, I would have to say. But, you know, it's fascinating because every year we've really enjoyed getting around on the trolley system, on the mass transit system, mm-hmm. the bus system. It's really good in San Diego.
Very good.
And so I feel kind of bad that now I might be spoiled and want to rent a car from this point forward. But that was certainly an important lesson. What else did you do?
Well, as a family, on Monday after the con, we all went as a family to SeaWorld, was great because I hadn't been to SeaWorld since I was as a kid. But it was wonderful. It wasn't that crowded until later in the day, and it was actually quite pleasant weather-wise.
Well, you know, I had never been to a SeaWorld. You'd think that we'd have one here in Hawaii, but we don't. So it was a great first experience for this SeaWorld virgin. I was surprised that there were rides and not just, you know, big whale tanks. And really, I was only after the whale. I was like, okay, let's see this Shamu thing. We sat down in the splash zone. The whale came around, drenched us completely, and I was like, that's it. You know, I was very satisfied. That's really all I needed. What else?
We spent two whole days around Balboa Park. On the first day, we went to the zoo. We went with my friend Christine and her kids. So there was actually a group of us going.
Yeah, Christine is the wife of Illyrio, who is another podcaster, and we're going to have him on the show soon.
Yes, we are. But it was really warm that day, and we actually left a little bit earlier than I would have liked. But the kids got pool time afterward, which made it all better.
At the hotel.
The zoo is amazing. We went to the zoo a couple years ago and spent the day, and it's, you know, there's a reason why it's world famous. I want to spend more time there next year, hopefully. But on the day after that, we went to Balboa Park, which is right next to the zoo, and we kind of just wandered the park. As a photographer, Balboa Park is very interesting to me because there's just these beautiful ancient looking buildings, and I spent a lot of time taking pictures. But we also went to the Museum of Natural History, and we went to the Air and Space Museum, and the boys played in the fountain, and it was beautiful. You could probably spend a couple of days just at Balboa Park.
As well as with the zoo. I mean, again, there's so much wonderful stuff there. Anything else you got up to? You didn't go to see the aircraft carrier that's sitting out right by the
convention center. We saw the USS Midway Museum, which was, it's a longer walk than you think it is, because we could see it from our hotel window, but we walked down and the boys were kind of nervous because it's a ship, and it's hard to imagine that there's not a lot of space, and the boys were kind of nervous about getting lost in there. So we kind of left around midday, and then I met up with Christine, and we decided that we were going to go see Coronado Island, which I had no idea was that close. It's very easy to get to Coronado Island. It's a very short ferry ride.
Yeah, the ferry's right behind the convention center. In fact, it was so close, I was like, wow, we should have been doing this every year.
And I'm really glad we did it this year, because mm-hmm. Coronado Island is so beautiful. On the island is a hotel from... I'm not sure when the hotel was built, but it's a beautiful hotel. It's a wonderful place to go. You should go spend the day, have dinner there, and come back on the ferry.
Well, that's the thing. You could leave the con. You know, the con pretty much wraps up at sunset, and you could go over to Coronado Island, have a great dinner on the waterfront, wander along the beach, see the city across the way, and then come back on the ferry. I mean, it seemed like such a distant thing when I had been reading about it, but its proximity to the con is going to make it a must-do every time moving forward. Well, we've talked quite a bit about Comic-Con and, of course, San Diego. I guess on the San Diego front, though, we cannot end this show without talking a little bit about the food. Now, on the convention side, you're just looking for cheap food, easy food, nearby food. For those, I mean, we basically recommend Ciro's Pizza, mm-hmm. which sells by the slice. It's a couple of blocks away.
Market and Fifth.
Right? Or you can go to a place called Cine Cafe, which is a little deli sandwich shop even closer to the convention, where you can basically pick up reasonably priced food and stuff your backpack full of bottles of water and full of these sandwiches.
This place is such a gem. Okay, this is like the best kept secret at Comic-Con, I think, is Cine Cafe, because the sandwiches are wonderful. They make salads. They'll make whatever kind of sandwich you want if it's not already in the chiller. So it's great. I would definitely pick up a couple of sandwiches and put them in your backpack, and it's just a great place.
Because you don't want to eat the food they sell in the convention center.
And, do not.
You know, the way I know that is this is the first year I got desperate enough to buy one of those pizzas that they sell. I think it was an $8 pizza.
Man.
It is quite literally, and I mean, I've heard people say this, but now I can affirm it personally. Please take it from me. It is, in fact, the worst pizza ever. And in
worse
fact,
than Chuck E. Cheese?
See, worse than Chuck E. Cheese. Worse than pizza that comes out of a whatever and you stepped on it. I mean, it was that bad, so stay away. Just go to Cine Cafe. But in and around San Diego, the place is known for its Mexican food. So I guess to wrap it up, I mean, what are some of the Mexican food lessons that we've learned about San Diego?
Fred's is a chain. There's one downtown. There's one in Old Town. There might be a couple of others. I'm not really entirely sure. But Fred's is a really good place, especially if you have been at the convention center kind of late and you just want to meet up with your friends. Fred's is a really good place to go. But my favorite Mexican food experience has been this year going to Old Town Mexican Cafe in Old Town. We've been intrigued by it for years. People talk about it all the time, but the problem with it is that it's very popular and there are lines. So we've ended up at other places in Old Town by default. But this year we got there at a pretty decent time and we got right in. And I gotta say, this has been my favorite Mexican restaurant.
Yeah, I think it was definitely worth it. I mean, we went to Coyote, which was right across the street one year, and then Fred's, which is across the street the other year, because we just want to avoid the line, but it might in fact be worth that wait. Oh, we haven't mentioned, of course, the fast food side of San Diego, In-N-Out.
Yummy, yummy, In-N-Out.
So sorry, Jack Gladfelter, we still make it a point to go out to In-N-Out to have one of those horribly disgusting greasy burgers every time we go to San Diego, and we still would recommend it. Well, there was a lot more about Comic-Con that we haven't told you about, but trust me when we say that it's a life-changing experience, and yes, the number one thing is not the con, or even not necessarily San Diego, but a lot of the people and the friendships that you make when you go. We really look forward to seeing other people more than we do some of these panels.
Absolutely. For me, the great thing about this trip is just seeing all the people that I've met online and that I've talked to. And it's in fact, we stayed with a lot of them on the same floor in our hotel this year.
Yeah, normally we stay far away. We get a cheaper hotel, but a nice hotel that you can take the trolley down. But this year we sprung for a hotel right next to the convention center, the Grand Hyatt Manchester, right there on the waterfront. And it was not cheap, but because we were able to coordinate with a lot of other fans and friends of Lost and other podcasters, we all were on the 22nd floor of the Seaport Tower. And apart from some of the noise that a group like that might make, it was really good to be really close both to the con and to great people that we know. So we'd recommend that. I mean, certainly camping out overnight on the lawn to go to Hall H, that's also an experience you have to do.
Even just pick a show at random that's going to be in Hall H early in the morning and camp out, because the experience is so special.
Yeah.
Because you get to talk to the people around you and they're all fans of the same thing that you're a fan of. And so sharing that is kind of a really special thing.
Yeah, we did it for Law, so that remains a top memory. This year I had to do it with Katie for Glee. But okay, still, you know, a bonding father-daughter experience. I hope you will consider giving Comic-Con a try if you haven't. Again, because of this whole ticket snafu, you have a better chance than ever to attend in 2012. Just be prepared to be a part of the masses that crash the servers and everything, and maybe even have some of your friends and relatives trying to register at the same time, because it's a lot easier to cancel if you got too many registrations than it is to not get the one that you want. Now, this has been an unexpectedly super-sized Wild Card Wednesday, but we do enjoy the show every week where we can talk about anything, and we're always looking for interesting topics to tackle, and some of the best ideas have come from you. So if you've got any ideas, any requests, random thoughts, or suggestions, please get in touch.
Leave a comment on our blog at popspotting.net, drop us a line at feedback@popspotting.net, or leave a voicemail at 815-310-0808.
If you want to start a conversation with other Pop Spotting listeners, please feel free to post your thoughts on our Facebook page at facebook.com/popspotting.
You can also find us on Twitter at twitter.com/popspotting.
Tomorrow is Thursday, and we'll find out if anyone still wants to play trivia with us.
Thanks to Dan Pashman of The Sporkful for our theme song, and mahalo to all of you for listening.
For Pop Spotting, I'm Ryan.
I'm Jen.
Aloha.